on, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley. Welcome to the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. We are sponsored by Tony Schuler, Clinical Medical Plus. We've got a great broadcast for everybody today. We've got a great professional. I'm ecstatic also to let everybody know that this broadcast will be also heard on phillyvoice.com. So we got a great reach with everybody. Again, great professionals. Sonny, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Joe. Let me ask you, are we done with the snow for the year?
I'll call my wife. She's kind of good like the...
Is she?
But maybe not. I don't know.
Because I'm sick of it already.
I know. Crazy. Certainly, I like a little snow, but it hit really badly over the last week, and certainly...
And all at one time. I mean, it really came down heavy.
You know, it's amazing. I live in the Roxbury's Falls section of Philadelphia, so we're nothing but hills. And we were on Henry Avenue driving, and there were accidents everywhere. Literally, the ice and all those things. And certainly,
but the plow crew couldn't keep up.
No way. And so it took us a few days to dig out. And here we are now. I mirror your sentiments, Sonny. If we don't get any more snow this year, I'm not going to shed a tear. Having said that, we've got a great guest who's not a stranger to the program and does a great job, if you will.
Joe, she's back.
All right.
Attorney Jamie Wiggins is with us again today. We previously had Jamie Wiggins on the show on January 27th, 2020. We asked her back because her previous appearance was so energetic and insightful. Jamie has her own all-female law firm called the Wiggins Law Group. Jamie Wiggins Law Firm is a boutique law firm with a focus on all aspects of personal injury and disability law. The firm also handles transactional matters, including business relations, wills and estates, bankruptcy, etc. The firm is conveniently located at the Sierra Center next to the Amtrak train station at 30th and Market Streets in Center City, Philadelphia. Jamie Wiggins has an interesting background. She started out as a paralegal in 2008. She then got her law degree from Villanova Law School in 2014 while still working as a paralegal. Boy, talk about a strong work ethic. Jamie started honing her trial skills in law school, where she was on Villanova's national trial team. She competed both regionally and nationally, placing first in the region and second in the country. Jamie Wiggins tirelessly helps her clients get the recovery they deserve. Jamie, if you would, please tell our listeners again about yourself and about your law firm.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me back on the show. It was so much fun last year, and I'm really excited to be here again.
Even though you were only second nationally, Sonny, we figured, what the heck?
Yes. Well,
holy cow.
We thought we'd make a concession.
Concession, right?
No concessions necessary, guys. I have more accolades that I've accomplished in the last year.
You're now the National
Trial Lawyers Association, top 40 under 40 in Pennsylvania, and the National Academy of Personal Injury Attorneys, top 10 under 40 in PA.
Nice.
So,
So my answer to Sonny is, what took you so long, Sonny? Crying out loud. Darn it. That's awesome.
It is.
But yeah, it's just still doing the personal injury thing, you guys. That's my main bread and butter. Enjoy helping, the little folk out whenever they're injured or getting hurt.
So the last time you were on was pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, yes.
So how did you adjust in terms of your practice with COVID?
Well, first I didn't adjust at all.
Right. Well, how could you? There was no blueprint at law school of what happens if, oh, by the way, a pandemic comes.
Sure.
And then after that, it was really just making sure that I could get everything streamlined and online. I was lucky enough to have, when I opened, I knew I needed to have, case management software and digital everything. And so I had all of that in place. And really the most frustrating thing, and Sonny, you tell me, when your people were out, was it getting the phone? I had the worst time with my people on the phone.
Yeah.
But we resolved it.
and with the pandemic, it's great to see you, but at the same time, it was almost like a lifetime ago in regards to the things that have happened since that time period. We talk about what especially in the legal field, but particularly in personal injury, and workers' comp.
Personal injury in particular, I mean, your practice has literally grind to a halt in terms of jury trials.
Absolutely. We've done nothing. I haven't had a single case move forward other than by mediation that was forced, you know, because it was like, hey, this has been around for a long, long time. But other than that, yeah, grinding halt, yes, nothing's moving.
And it's amazing when you're dealing with that situation, the communication, I'm sure, that you have with your clients has you've upped that, I'm sure, staying in touch with them, because certainly it's new to them also.
If you're not proactive and call them, they'll definitely call you.
Yeah. That's the truth.
Yeah. But how have you done that throughout the year? Because, you know, people were stressed. It's a difficult time for them.
That's, you know, one of the first things I did was make sure I sent a really nice letter out to everybody, just letting them know that, like, nobody's forgotten. If you're not hearing from somebody,
call us,
let us know what's going on. It's just a matter of everybody getting, their footing in this new world.
Sure.
I like the letter idea versus an email, because it shows that you took the time to reach out to your clients.
Sure.
Absolutely. And with the email, too, I feel like everybody just doesn't read them anymore. It's like junk mail.
Yeah. No, by the way, that's a fact. The open rates, unless you're normally communicating with somebody by email, by the way, Jamie, if you're going to email me, you're going to get a response in 15 seconds. I'm on my email all day. But the open rates are very difficult, and it poses an unnatural situation. Because, you know, you're right. Emails, you may say, if you send a couple emails, next thing you know, somebody's like, I'm sorry, I didn't get your message. But, you know.
Yeah, I think emails are almost like CDs these days. I mean, it's really texting. That's the way to reach people.
Texting is an optimal, the open rate's ridiculous because everybody opens their texts because nobody wants that little button, it's got a little dot there, and you got to get rid of the dot, right? You got to get rid of the notification. But, keeping throughout the process, has that been, a top priority for yourself and the staff, just to let them know what's going on?
Oh, absolutely. It's our top priority. And I'm not going to lie either. We got behind on it, too, because it just became an avalanche of phone calls where I could spend the entire day sitting on the phone, going over everything. And that was why I was like, let me get a nice letter together. Let everybody know. And then we tried to, like, within every 2 months, try to touch base with everybody we can. And I did switch to a phone service that uses a texting through my business line. So that's awesome. If I miss a call, they get an immediate text. They can text back to it, and it links all to their file. So that was nice, and that helped me kind of organize it, because, like I said, at first I wake up and start looking at it, and it's just this list of missed calls, and like I said, I'm calling my people and I'm like, what are you doing? I understand you're working from home, but you still start at 9.
Not so, 9 at
so
night.
Did you have any staffing issues that you weren't ready for?
Unfortunately, yes. I was, when it first happened, I made the choice to go ahead and do a 2-week shutdown where everything was virtual. And I allowed my 2 employees that I had to go on unemployment, because I kind of was worried that it would go longer than the 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It ended up going from mid-March until June.
Yeah.
In June, I called and I'd kept in touch the whole time with the staff too. And then, I was up all night maintaining the business.
Sure.
And then I called them and I was like, hey, let's start back, June 10th or whatever it was. I remember as soon as we went to like yellow here.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh no, we're not coming back.
Excuse me?
Sorry, what? I was like, what do you mean you're not coming back? And they were just like, oh no, we don't think it's safe. And I was like, okay, well, what if we work on working virtually, because I do have everything set up so that you could do that. And they weren't interested. So I did have a whole turnover.
Jamie, they must have been Democrats. I'm joking. If they were Republicans, they'd be like, I'll be right back. I'm being sarcastic. I'm a Democrat. But I'm just, it is funny, or not funny, the way you look at it. Different people have different
you know, obviously restrictions on themselves.
Well, wasn't that one of the arguments with the stimulus package in terms of, you know, the amount of the package that people, some people would get more on unemployment?
Yeah.
And it would encourage them to stay home as opposed to going back to work.
Yeah. And obviously, it's been awesome for a lot of people. And at the same time, it's been difficult. You know, I mean, people want to get back to the, and you don't want to lose. You know, that you talk about law firms and the legal field and how, as attorneys and firm owners, Sonny and Jamie, that you've been able to adjust and deal with this situation. Ironically, in the legal field, different types of attorneys have had different experiences. When you're an injury attorney, aside from the jury trials, which is a big deal, obviously, when you're a personal injury attorney, and as a workers' comp attorney, injury, but workers' comp, you don't deal with the juries, but you do, Jamie. But there are other fields in the law, like immigration law, where they absolutely need face-to-face.
Yep.
It's a totally different ball game, and it should put them down to a completely shutdown. Yep. Totally. Having said that, not much unlike our society. If you found yourself in a restaurant business, as we all know, you know, or it's a scary situation. My wife was in the salon business, in the hair salon. She retired about 5 years ago because she got an autoimmune disease so I was in the nightclub business. She was in the hair salon. If we were in that business, if it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, we would have been at a total shutdown. So our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone. But the fact that your firms, and a tribute to yourself, because, by the way, not every firm in injury law has survived it. You guys have been very proactive in dealing with the situation. Technology. How have things changed at the firm in regards to client communications, depositions, you know, dealing with the defense? Talk about that.
Zoom has been both a blessing and a source of hysterics for me.
Really?
I've seen so many things on Zoom in the last few months that I can't even. But so Zoom is our new technology where anytime we need to do anything face-to-face, like you were saying with the depositions, for me going over the discovery with the clients and different things, if I can, I'm doing it via Zoom so that I'm not putting anybody at risk. And it's hard for older people. It's really hard for them to understand how to work it, even though for us it's so easy. You think you just click it, but they don't, you know, unmute yourself or do this or do that. And they're like, I just thought I had to
say it. When you say older, give me an age range here because I have a hard time. Oh, just kidding. Don't say it.
I think we're in the age group that she's talking about.
Definitely me, because I did a Zoom seminar yesterday.
55 and older.
Boom, right here. I did a Zoom.
Likewise.
I cannot. Something's up on my computer. I can barely get on there with my phone. And when I do get on, the volume never works. So yesterday I almost
listen
had a call.
Listen to him, Jamie. He's blaming his equipment.
That's okay. Whoever, it's an easy go-to.
I'm blaming whoever invented it.
Thank God we had it. Seriously.
Yes, absolutely.
My practice would not have survived.
No, mine either.
So having said that, though, you know, you're doing depositions. And what's the difference in dealing with a deposition and having your client deposed by a defense attorney,
Do you think it has the same impact?
So I've seen it go both ways, actually. I've had where I thought it had actually a better impact. It went so well because she was so calm.
Right, more relaxed.
Yes, because she's in her own environment.
Exactly.
But I've also had it where the clients are so distressed that they're not with the attorney that it becomes an issue. And then I don't know if you've had this issue, Sonny, but defense attorneys do not want you to be in the same room as your attorney if you're on Zoom.
Yes, I've had that issue. Because they think that you're passing your client stuff.
Notes. I'm like, I'll sit right in front of the screen too, but that contact is missing for some people that need that. So I've seen it go both ways, and I've also had a horrible time with people and masks. It's getting better now, but early on, they were wearing the shield, they were wearing the mask, and they're on Zoom, and I cannot hear you, and that is the whole point of this. So, and you'd ask them, and then they'd tell you, no, they're not going to take it off because they had the mandates and this and that. And, well, then I'm going to have to cancel the deposition. I'm sorry. I'll see you in a few.
Right. And in comp, we use Zoom primarily for court appearances. So one of the reasons why the judge wants to see the injured worker, the claimant, is to judge their credibility. And the only way you can do that is if you can see their face.
Exactly.
Well, you can't see their face if they're wearing a big mask.
Exactly.
So that's a problem in my practice. So are you actually signing up new clients through Zoom?
Not as many as I'd like, but yes, absolutely.
How's
it's still
that been?
Working. It's going actually quite well. I meet with them on there. We go over everything. I feel like I can get a pretty good feel for them,
right.
You know, off of there. And then, you know, send them a DocuSign. So it's all working out fairly well. And then if they really want to see me, they still can always come to the office.
Sure.
And I have a nice big boardroom with a, what are those plastic partitions called? But, you know, so
right.
that we're nice and separate.
So having said that, how about the insurance companies? Now, you know, one of the reasons we talk about the communications and also with the clients is that a client now who maybe once was object injured and his or her spouse worked and they could outlast situations, now may be more stressed. Okay, now you're in a situation where somebody may be in a way. Those are things as an attorney you need to know. But insurance companies also, at the beginning, Sonny, we talked about situations where people would be, you know, attorneys would be saying, well, the insurance companies are different based on the insurance company, but pretty reasonable. At this point, I'm not hearing that from anybody. They know people are stressed.
Right. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, insurance companies were using the pandemic to their advantage to sweat out clients. But now they're in a position where they need to move files.
I was just going to say,
Sonny. I'm getting a lot of calls now.
Yes, you and me both. Although it was like the new year switched over, and I think they realized they have some serious tax implications from not settling that.
Really? So that's interesting. So tell me about that, because that's, you know, like in other words, the insurance companies, you know, it's an interesting situation. They know you don't
Think about it. For each case, I think the law requires that the insurance company, you know, keep a reserve for that particular case. And I think the reserve is fairly steep.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, you multiply that reserve by a couple hundred thousand files.
Yep.
And, you know, you're in trouble because the insurance company is not able to use that reserve money to their advantage.
Exactly. And so it's all just sitting. And now all of a sudden, like, it was like a switch turned come New Year. And I have, like you said, the calls. So if any of my clients are listening, I've been telling you all along, it would break, the bubble would break, and things would move. And we are finally getting there with the insurance companies. They did enjoy a very nice year-long respite.
Though. They did.
But what are their... Like, in other words, negotiating now that there's a settlement, the one thing that they have is the fact that they know that right now that you're one of your biggest friends and allies is an individual having the jury of their peers and being able to, you know, deal with that situation where, you know, somebody's there. It's David versus Goliath. Clearly, there's a situation. You're very good in front of a jury, and they know that, okay? And they don't want to take a chance. That's no longer, it's temporary.
Exactly. But we have that issue right now, right? They're avoiding it, and they're able to avoid it right now. And so certainly they can pinch people who will take a lower amount. But I have, in most cases where it's in litigation and that's going on, I've notified the client that I really think you need to, like, hold on and wait it out and, you know, don't let them undersettle you here. Because eventually... we're going to have juries again, whether they're electronically or through Zoom. I mean, it is a constitutional right. So it's coming back. And when it does, you have to realize that all your peers went through this too.
Sure.
And so they are going to be more sympathetic to you than the insurance company.
So what are you hearing? How close are we to having jury trials again?
Philly is is focused right now on criminal from what I'm hearing. Okay. But they are starting to, for instance, the arbitration center's moving way faster now with the Zoom arbs. They're doing much better. And they're starting to actually schedule two periods of them a day.
And explain for the listeners what an arbitration is versus a jury trial.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So, in most, cases, you get to have the opportunity to file for a jury, or you can file in a lower level of the court and do what's called a compulsory arbitration, which means you have a panel of three attorneys practicing in your local field who will hear your case like a jury and make a decision. And then that case, that's appealable. And the benefits are that are just, you know, it's oftentimes faster, it's more streamlined, and it's for cases that you're not really going to rely on that jury making those decisions because everything's kind of, you know, neat or clear cut.
And is there a dollar limit on the recovery in those cases?
There is, actually. It's $50,000. Okay. So it's mostly lower level cases. But so I've seen the arbitration center pick up, and usually the court will follow behind because you have to understand once the arbitrations are flowing again and they're starting to get appeals, those appeals are going into the jury system. Sure. So the jury system's just further backlogging. So the, you know, ear to the ground is that by summer we're going to be back in some form of moving these trials along.
And the arbitration process, I mean, that's not a sterile process. You've got a three-judge panel.
Absolutely.
You've got and they're attorneys.
Absolutely.
You've got attorneys on each side. You're going to have a plaintiff and maybe several fact witnesses.
Exactly. Defendant, too, is sometimes there, sometimes not. You have a full-on, it's almost like a mini trial. I do them all the time. I sit them as an arbitrator all the time. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Well, the question, are they, and I know that it's, you know, it probably varies between cases, but typically speaking, from our previous show and also a lot of conversations, individuals, attorneys prefer a jury trial over at least a judge, you know, dealing with a judge, but are arbitration panels typically, I'm not going to say pro defendant or plaintiff, but are you comfortable in that setting if it's a time sensitive situation and somebody wants to go and get justice, are you comfortable doing that, or would you really just, it's a last resort?
Well, I think that it's all, that's very case specific. So some of the downfalls to arbitration are that I don't know my audience before I walk into it. You know, you don't know who's going to be on the panel that day. They do try to do a plaintiff's attorney, a defense attorney, and a neutral so that they can all kind of come to a consensus. But you don't always get that, number one. You sometimes have plaintiff's attorneys who just absolutely will not give a defense verdict. And you have defense people who absolutely will not give a plaintiff verdict. So it's kind of a dice roll. And I like to keep, for me, I'm mostly in the jury pool. I'm not in the ARBs a lot, but I do them for smaller level motor vehicle accidents. You know, anybody who's limited tort without a like clearly breaching injury. Sometimes just
sprain,
where you have
strain type
sprains,
injury.
Strains, yeah. Yeah. And
no broken bones, no herniated discs.
Exactly.
So it's interesting. I did an arbitration case one time at my nightclub. A girl got in a fight in the middle of my dance floor. We didn't have an incident report for it, so I didn't know. It was rare that we wouldn't have an incident report. And I work real hard. When I was in the business, you know, when I got a call from my lawyer, you know, we would go through the facts. I get the incident report and all those things. However, this particular one stood out to me because the description that the girl said was that she got in a fight in the middle of our dance floor. And this was, now, so we were after hours. So at 2 o'clock, 1,000 people showed up. This was at 1:30, quarter of two. She said she got in the fight in the middle of the dance floor. And then our security guards took 10 minutes to get there. Let me tell you something. If you get in a verbal altercation in 10 seconds, when it takes the chance, there's literally no chance. No chance. I didn't even have to be there. Having said that, I'm like, okay, well, And she also said that she was a hairstylist and she did business. And that's how she got her clients going to nightclubs. Now, I'm an idiot. Let's get it. I just barely made it through the first semester of community college. But I got that one. Okay, there's no way, right? So we had an arbitration panel. We went right in. And they awarded her like 50K. So I was like, okay. God bless her. But my point was, I'm like, you know, thinking about that. And I I was standing there. I'm like, I wasn't.
But the flip side is it did limit your exposure. Because if you had had a jury trial, then there's no cap on the recovery.
It's true.
Still doesn't sit well with him.
Yeah, he's still not happy about it.
And no, you're right about that. And I think it was, you know what? I don't think she got the 50. She might have got like 48, 49. She took the under $50,000.
Yep.
And that's why we went in front of the arbitration.
Sure.
So I stood up and cross-examined her, and I said to her, I want the truth. She said, you want the truth? I said, you can't handle the truth.
That's why you lost.
Is that why? I thought
just teasing
so.
You.
But I say—
TV lawyer.
Right. Like that. I mean, except that, you know, imagine if that scene from A Few Good Men was under the pandemic. Nicholson would have had a mask on. Right. No way. Tom Cruise would have. But I say that because, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. I would think that three attorneys there and when you're dealing with somebody as experienced as you are, Jamie, you know, when you have a judge that's tough on, you know, but when it's an arbitration panel, like you said, you're out there.
Yeah.
You
don't know what kind of audience you're walking into, and you literally learn it as you come into the room, and you look up there, and you're like, do I know those names? Who are they with? Where are they from?
First of all, they were looking at me, and I'm like, they don't like me. Flat out. I'm standing there going,
You know that old saying, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous?
Yeah.
Well, you're dealing with, you know, an audience, a three-attorney panel. They know a little bit about, you know, personal injury practice, and they kind of throw those things into the mix, and sometimes that can interfere with the presentation.
And also, I've done a lot of depositions, and we did that for a long time. So I mean, you know, and so we've been on shows where we've brought defense attorneys on, and one of the shows that was my attorney. Okay, I mean, you know, Drew Malik was my attorney. His boss and our Pat Lamb.
Oh my God.
Pat Lamb, right? So Pat Lamb was his boss. So it was ironic because the attorney host of the show brought his best buddy on, Pat Lamb, who happened to be my attorney. But my point is, I didn't get personal. I mean, I was always, you know, sensitive to somebody getting injured. But you never know which way it's going to go.
It's true.
But I do find it really interesting when you talk about the arbitration panel. One of the things, we got a couple minutes to the break, we want to talk about is also the types of cases that you handle. When somebody comes to the firm, I'm not going to say garden variety, but you're known as a successful attorney and a go-to person for a specific type of case, cases. In specific areas where somebody gets injured. We got a couple minutes. What would be, you know, a primary type of case that you would handle?
So my garden variety is, first of all, my favorite cases of all time are premise liability, slip and falls, any kind of fall. I don't know why I get so into them. They're so fun to me. And I actually...
Are you pointing at me? So I'm thinking
I'm pointing at you. I'm pointing at
nightclub.
You because, I went against your lawyer, Pat Lamb, in a slip and fall case. And I bet you he died a little inside when he lost that arb.
Oh.
But in any event, slip and falls are my favorite. Car accidents, and I'm very, very excited. I typically would refer medical malpractice in the past, and I actually have two that I've been working on over the last year that I'm going to file myself. So
wow.
I'm super excited to be moving into that sphere.
Definitely.
And you know, it's amazing. Everybody would think that with medical malpractice, and it's not, it's never a... you know, an easy thing. I had a friend of mine who got his leg cut off. A friend of mine who referred me to somebody who got his leg cut. It took me literally to refer him to get an attorney to pick this case up. It literally took two or three attorneys. And the reason
it's a hustle to get it. Yep.
And the fact that it's not, cut and dry thing.
Yeah, it's right. not easy.
I mean, you're, you know,
it's involved area law. Not only do you have to understand the applicable law, but understand the medicine.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I'm really interested in, and as a boutique firm owner and somebody who, when somebody calls your firm, they get to talk to you. What led you to take those cases? And we're going to get into some of the other cases when we get back from the break. We're going to have more from the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks and his guest Jamie Wiggins after the break.
Suffering a work injury or any type of personal injury can be a painful and traumatic experience. What can make it even more difficult for a patient is trying to navigate and find the quality medical care they need for their particular injury. Healthmark Enterprises is a full-service medical coordination and marketing company started in 1994 by CEO Robin Lewison that takes all the worry and complications out of treatment for a work or personal injury. From coordinating full-service medical treatment with a top medical professionals, providers, and specialists to overseeing patient compliance and providing one-on-one personalized communications with clients. Healthmark Enterprises handles the entire treatment process for injured workers and those suffering personal injuries so they can just concentrate on getting better. Healthmark Enterprises believes that being injured should not limit one's access to great medical care. Now, more than ever, an injured person needs an advocate on their side. Contact Healthmark Enterprises at 215-563-1315. That's 215-563-1315. Healthmark Enterprises. Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. We are talking to Jamie Wiggins of Wiggins Law. We're sponsored by Tony Shuler and Pinnacle Medical Plus. We're talking personal injury law here with Jamie Wiggins, and you before we went to break, you mentioned obviously motor vehicle slip and fall, but you also said that this year you're doing a couple medical malpractice cases, which as a boutique firm owner you usually don't see. Typically, attorneys have great relationships; they'll get the case and they'll forward it to somebody who does that, okay?
It's usually the bigger firms that you think...
You
got me, Joe?
I got you now. Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's usually the bigger firms that handle those kinds of cases because you assume that they have the resources because those cases are expensive.
I mean, absolutely.
It takes a lot to put on a medical malpractice case.
So what led you... we don't need to get into the specifics, but the fact that you're taking these two, and like I said, it took me three attorneys just to get... And the gentleman was... And the actual doctor who caused the medical malpractice actually said he did it, and we still couldn't get an attorney to pick it up.
It's so hard.
So what led you to actually accept these cases?
To jump on that, exactly what you said. I had two – I refer them generally, okay? Like, so I've had a garden variety of them. I've been referring them for years. I've sat second chair or, gone into the depositions and done everything with whoever I've referred them to. But I ran across two of them that I referred out and they got turned down. And I was like, so I referred them again. And, like a few months goes by and they really like it. They really like it. And then they got turned down again. Yeah. And I sat and I spread them out on a big, huge table. And I went through every piece of those medicals. And the truth is the big firms don't want them because they're just not worth enough money.
Right.
But in terms of the actual liability, the liability is nice and clean. There's not, you know, the clients are good clients for it. You know, a lot of the little nuances that'll get them kicked weren't there. It's just the, hey, it's not a big enough pot. It's not big enough pot for me.
But you know what's interesting about that?
And your client.
Yeah.
but you know what's really interesting? So, we've had, Sonny's had medical malpractice attorneys on, and we had an iron worker who had an elbow surgery in a big hospital in the city of Philadelphia. I've been doing radio a while, so just when you think I'm going to say the name of the doctor, I don't say it. Okay, right? What you just said when you talk about the value of the case, so I'll never forget it. This iron worker, there was a massive doctor that did it. And I got a call from his business agent and said, Joe, the guy's going through a lot. I know you deal with a lot of attorneys. So I said, okay. So I pointed him in a couple directions. And he had a work comp case, but he swore that the doctor that did the surgery, I mean, that was supposed to do the surgery, didn't do it. He had other people do it, and there was a dispute some kind of a screw in his elbow, and one doctor could see it. I sent him to a couple doctors, and the one doctor just said, "I can't look at this." I mean, there was some. It looked like shady stuff going on. I mean, and they weren't even related to the case.
Sure, but for fear that they might be called as a witness,
right? Mm-hmm. And this doctor was a big dog, and so. Anyway, having said that, what was interesting was finally, the guy was at his wit's end, and I didn't want him to go to his grave thinking that he had a massive case and that, you know, that the doctor was who did the surgery was just intimidating everybody. Right. The guy's a big dog. So I called somebody that we had on your program, Sonny, and he said he does only medical malpractice, and I said, listen to me. I need your insight here. First of all, the guy was calling me every 15 minutes, and I didn't have answers, but I had empathy. And he was in such a bad way. And he was from my old neighborhood. And so I called the attorney up, and he said to me, he explained one thing about attorneys like yourself and experienced medical malpractice attorneys. I just described it, and he understood immediately what it was. And he said to me, Joe, here's why he can't get an attorney. He's got a case, but it's not, the case isn't valuable enough to not only invest in that case, but the fact is, we're going to spend so much investigating. It's going to cost this. At the end of it, there's not going to be anything left for him. It's not a big enough case. So it's not that he doesn't have a liability, okay? But when I called that guy back up and I told him that, his tears coming out of his eyes were so distressed that was relieving, and it made sense. Okay, the legal field is, guys like regular people like me or some person who's trying to diagnose their illness or something or their legal case. Okay, you think you know it. You don't know it. You think that's why it's important to get to that point. I mention that because how many, Jamie, how many medical malpractice cases actually go to trial a year? I heard in the city of Philadelphia, it's like 300. It's that small.
Right,
it is.
Not a lot.
It is. I'd say of 90% of them that I refer are rejected, and of the 10% that they do take, I would say 1% of those actually makes it to a trial and an end point.
It makes you wonder, Sonny, why so many doctors are worried about HIPAA?
Oh, well, why are they so worried about their tort reform and everything too? Sure. I don't know.
I'm just sitting there going, what are you worried about? The number of cases.
But what you said, Joe, is an important lesson for our listeners. Don't be discouraged if an attorney turns your case down.
Absolutely.
Go to another one.
That's
yes,
right.
Keep trying.
And don't forget the small boutique firms, because those firms are more likely to take a smaller case than a larger firm.
Well, you may get a multi-million dollar settlement for this individual.
Sure.
Okay.
I could potentially.
That a big firm, like a couple firms I'm thinking of, it literally wouldn't, a multi-million dollar.
It meant nothing to them.
It might, right. Because they may have $100 million.
A lot of those firms have cutoffs. We're not going to take a case unless we can, you know, potentially get $5 million worth of recovery.
One of the nicest calls that I've ever gotten was the attorney that actually took the case with the guy who lost his leg. And I went to, you know, two or three our friends that we do radio with. And it's great to know that there's individuals out there like yourself that may be able to get justice for somebody that can't get it somewhere else. And, Sonny, you mentioned, you know, and there are multi-million dollar cases that have gotten turned down by so many firms.
Absolutely.
And sometimes people don't see the forest through the trees, which is a good way to look
Absolutely.
At it. What made you laid everything out on the table and said, I think we got something here.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, both of the people that are involved in these, I believe that I've been with them from day one. They called me first. And I believe them. I've met them. I've seen their suffering. And I believe them, number one. Number two, then, like I said, when I laid it all out, I was like, well, look at this. This is it. And I'm medically inclined anyway. My mother was a nurse growing up. So sure. I've always, like, been fascinated, you know, with medical things. I used to read her textbooks for fun.
Wow.
You can't tell when you look at them now who's highlighting who.
Holy cow.
But, and then on top of that, Donnelly Jones, who used to be a medical malpractice attorney with Saltz Mongoluzzi, has always been my mentor. And I've always said that someday I'm going to be like her. And the medical malpractice, I always just found so fascinating.
Yeah.
And, I missed on it. Now she's what, president of U.S. Claims?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is amazing. And just so you know, when you get that multi-million dollar settlement, I want to be there for you. So I just want to be closer as friends. I don't know, maybe go on a nice vacation. Of course, I'm not holding the money right now. You are, so it's going to be on you.
I mean, imagine the smile on the client's face.
That must be the best call ever.
When you're able to get that recovery.
How long are those cases away before the, you know, before, because it takes them. You know, one of the things you talk about here is how long it takes. You know, this is just part A. Then actually going through the entire process, how long before they potentially go to trial, and number one, and number two, before they may even come to fruition, and how do you deal with the client over that amount of time?
With COVID, I have no idea when they're going to go to trial, but what I do know is that they are both in the process of getting their certificates of merit, because both of them, that's not a problem. So both experts are currently doing that for both cases. One of them involves injury that, while there's recovery, there's permanent scarring that helps us, and the recovery took about a year. So he's okay, though. He's somebody who I can say, listen, you just gotta wait and let me do this.
Right.
And he's okay. And the other party is someone who lost somebody. Mm-hmm. And so that one has been much more difficult to walk the process with, because it's an extremely emotional process too, because I bring up what he lost almost every time we speak.
Jim, you mentioned that both of those cases are about to get their certificate of merit. That's
yes.
a fairly new a requirement. Correct, the medical malpractice.
What is that?
One of our tort reforms here in Pennsylvania, where in order to so. Just to give an example, you have a car accident case. I can run down to City Hall and file a document within 20 minutes if you sign it, and we're done. We're good. Your lawsuit's filed. I can take it to court. In medical malpractice, what they've done is basically make you put the cart before the horse. You have to prove your case before you can even file it. And an independent, unrelated doctor who you don't even intend to really use as your testifying expert has to say, yes, there was a breach in the standard of care. And that's his certificate of merit. It means your lawsuit has merit, at least on some basis, to go forward.
Interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, you're talking
And who picks the physician that determines that the case has merit? Do you select that?
I select them.
You did, okay.
Yeah.
So you basically have to have somebody who's willing to step forward and say, okay. And that, I'm assuming... it's not an easy process.
No, you have to vet them. You have to go through their history.
They have to have credibility.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's you know,
credentials.
And, And affordability. Yeah. Just kidding. Spend whatever I need to.
No, I know, but wait a minute. Hold on. That's important.
That affordability. A critical aspect of these cases.
It's a critical aspect of the cases, and people don't realize that, in a sense. You're one of the reasons why you don't have, attorneys, coming out of the woodwork at these things where there can be a multi-million-dollar settlement is because you have to invest in the case. And by the way, give me an idea of how much more this does.
And before you answer, thank God for people like Donna Jones in U.S. Claims because, they're able to fund a lot of these cases.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And she's always she's a fabulous resource for any attorneys out there that are listening. If you want somebody just to talk shop with your case and tell you if your case is good, if your case is bad, if you can do it, her and her underwriting team will do that for you. They're amazing.
Because she's been there. She's been in your shoes.
Absolutely.
I mean, first of all, you opened up a little box there. So tell me, it's an underwriting company?
So essentially, you heard of Peachtree or Oasis or any of these lawsuit funding companies, right? J.G. Wentworth, it's my money and I need it now.
Right.
It's that kind of setup, only U.S. Claims will actually fund the attorneys themselves and the cases themselves too. So they buy a percentage of the case.
And probably in a lot of ways, there would be no way to move forward. It levels the playing ground against a behemoth insurance company.
Absolutely. It does.
Who you can just, to me, that's absolutely essential. What's important for our listeners to understand is that when your case gets accepted by somebody, an attorney as skilled as Jamie Wiggins, you normally could not in any shape or form afford to fight an insurance company. So... You as an attorney, you get the financing. You take it on your own chin.
Yeah, we should emphasize to the listeners.
Cost them nothing.
The client doesn't pay anything.
Nothing.
Jamie fronts the expenses.
I front all of the costs, and I can tell you that just to have the records reviewed for one of these, okay, so the one record's not very big. What happened was silly, but it created a long-lasting injury, okay? But so it's not a big record. It's a skinny record. So that's my cheapie. But my one where we had a death, that one, we're talking about a copious amount of records. Just the current cert process, I had to put $5,000 down for him to review the records, and I will probably have to pay him another $5,000 at the end. And that's just for one of the experts. That's just one. I will need at least three more.
Wow.
That's why they're so complicated. To say that in the city of Philadelphia, 250 to 300 go to trial a year. To me, that was one of the most staggering statistics that I'd ever heard.
It's crazy.
In my life. Moving on to motor vehicle, which is something that you're an expert at as well, and this is one that obviously, like you said, you deal with it on a regular basis. What are the status of those types of cases right now? Especially after a year of COVID.
Unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of the car. So if it was a nice, clean rear ender with full tort, it's paid, it's done, it's over with, they got rid of it. But if it's any kind of negotiation required, it's stuck. Unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of movement until, we were saying earlier, just recently do I kind of have adjusters knocking down my doors. And I also think it's funny because they're like, can you send me a demand? And I'm like, I sent you a demand 6 months ago. Where is it? But, they're starting to reopen now. They're starting to get them moving again. The threat of suit is a little more real now because, like I said, the courts are starting to move along again. Crawl, but still, we're starting. So,
what about some of the larger defendants in the motor vehicle realm, like, say, SEPTA? Are they easy, difficult?
SEPTA's been a nightmare. Did you guys hear about the malware attack?
No.
All right. So we're going all the way back to August. SEPTA had a malware attack. So their systems were completely shut down. So basically, any case against SEPTA that was filed went into deferment, or they put a stay on it with the court, meaning it's paused, right? Nothing can happen. And then in terms of any claims. You couldn't even get in touch with the adjusters other than via email, and they couldn't have any access to your case file that's electronically kept there because if they it was potentially, you know, it's all shut off because it was attacked, being hacked. So they have just now, so that happened in September, they have just now started the reopening process. They haven't formally lifted the stay yet, I don't believe. I haven't seen that order come across my email. But what I have seen come across my email was the claims adjusters at SEPTA saying, hey, I'm back, you know, give me a buzz, let's talk about
it. Imagine the backlog that's created.
Well, I'll tell you.
It's horrific.
It makes sense because we had an injured worker from TW 234, their union. And now you've you pinpointed something for me, because this particular individual, obviously can't give his name, but he tripped over. It's an old timer walking on the tracks. He's got issues in his legs. And he said to me, you know, that he couldn't get in touch with his claims adjuster, right? And that they're having issues there.
Yep.
And one of the really amazing things was that his legs, his ankles were swollen. And this is 6 weeks after the injury. And to me, again, not a doctor or a lawyer, but I know that congestive heart failure and all those. Next time I talked to him, a week later, he called me and said, oh, by the way, what I was at, or, you know, the examiner, et cetera, or whatever, you know, their insurance company, nurse or doctor, they mentioned that. This is 6 weeks ago. The guy's laying at home. He can't get in touch with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So now, I guess I don't stay up on top of that enough, or I missed it somehow about the malware problem.
Well, they don't want it to be, you know, big news, because unfortunately in the beginning they actually had, it was affecting their schedules, their ride schedules and stuff. Anything, and their app, everything was compromised in the beginning.
Interesting.
So if you actually Google it, you can see how, you know, for a couple of weeks there in August, the whole system was chaotic.
Do they know the origin? Were they hacked from somebody from the outside?
It's definitely external, but I don't know who. And around the same time, Delaware County had a malware attack. Huh. And so then Delaware County's court system and entire municipal system was also shut down up until a couple weeks back, and they paid the hackers.
Wow.
I thought that was funny. I was like, Delco paid and SEPTA didn't pay them a dime. Right. They stretched that out and got it fixed. But
go figure.
You know, but yeah, so it's just now in that backlog. So that's, they weren't doing anything really with COVID anyway. And they were trying, they were open.
I mean, they actually got hacked by somebody, obviously overseas, blackmailed and paid the money.
Yeah.
Delco did, yeah. And, okay. And SEPTA, I think that they actually hired tech people to take care of it and fix the attack, and so that they wouldn't have to pay to get their information back.
Oh, SEPTA did that?
I believe so. But Delaware County paid the hackers. I know that. That was in the news.
Sounds like an interesting business, Sonny. I mean,
sure does.
I gotta learn how to do that. My God. But I mean, I've heard things like that.
But and your clients think you're crazy when you tell them, no, I literally can't even email them, and I cannot send them any documents right now because your documents could be compromised.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean? It's SEPTA. And I'm like, I know, but, you know.
No, it's unbelievable. When you're dealing with the car accident victims, which I know you have a big caseload of, you're dealing with medical, and you're dealing with even with slip and falls.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that now? You have a lot of people that are high risk in this world of COVID, okay? And some individuals, don't get me wrong, I've seen my nephew doing gym class on Zoom, okay? So I know they're doing therapy of one way or another, and they're doing telemed with injuries.
Yes.
But still, it's not the same. Are there any complications that creates? With now that medical isn't what it easily used to be, where you just go you're compliant and all those things. How's that affect things now?
I'm really concerned about how they're going to value that. I'm really concerned that they're going to devalue cases based on that, which is another reason why, thank God, we will have our juries back, because the jury can see right through that. What were you supposed to do?
Sure.
You know, but the insurance company, to them, it's like, little trick to our business. They almost always are valuing the amount of visits you go to.
If you were really hurt, you could have.
You would have made it. You would have seen somebody.
Despite
you
would have.
Well, let's look at it. We have your life, your case, your injury. Your life. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd have a tough time being an attorney in those situations. You know, I can't pass the bar. That's number one. But B, I don't think I could sit across from somebody and have them. My answer would be, listen, would you let your daughter or son go? I mean, if they were in that situation, it's just such an inhuman process. But I guess the next time they're sensitive about a real life issue will be the first.
Yeah. I see it quite a bit in my practice. I mean, insurance companies in the comp practice have a right to send my clients to what's called an IME, an independent medical examination. It's really not independent because the insurance company sets it up, but they have a right to that examination once every 6 months. And, I've had clients saying, I'm absolutely not going during COVID. And the insurance company will file a petition against them trying to stop their benefits because they're refusing to go to the exam.
And how does in workers' comp?
The judges have been very sympathetic.
The courts generally have been sympathetic with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess, I heard...
Especially somebody who's compromised.
Exactly. You know. And you get that all the time now.
Sure.
You know, like, I have so many elderly people that, like, you know, that they can't. It's they're the highest risk category. They're going to go to therapy. They'd rather have their back hurt than be on a vent. Sorry.
Oh, it's a good point. And when you say elderly, what do you mean by that?
Keep doing that to me.
Just kidding.
But one of the ways that I've combated this is by instructing all of my clients that were treating during the COVID period that had any interruption to journal like they've never journaled before.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yep.
You know, they're documenting everything, and that's a great,
If you put heat on at home, write it down for me. And they actually have done a really good job with it, especially since I set up that text thing so they can text to me.
Sure.
And I just have whole strands of them. Today I put on heat, today I did this, today I did that, today I did this. And it's just an undisturbed, like, list of
That's fantastic. Jamie, we got a couple minutes left. If you would, and this has been the fastest hour in radio.
Sure has.
It really has.
Always flies with you guys.
Yeah. I'll tell you, if you would give our listeners your contact information, name of the firm, if they want to get in touch.
Absolutely. So, guys, it's Jamie Wiggins at Wiggins Law, LLC. And you can call us, 267-225-0770. We are on Facebook at Wiggins Wins, and same with Instagram at Wiggins Wins. Win with Wiggins and give us a call for any of your needs.
I absolutely love that. www.wigginswins.com.
Where else? Here.
Check it out.
I mean, Sonny.
What a marketer.
Yeah, I love it. Sonny, contact information?
Sure. Banks Law, 215-561-1000. Web address, www.bankslaw.com.
All right. I want to thank you, Sonny, and Jamie, for a fantastic broadcast.
Yeah, appreciate it, Jamie. We enjoyed it.
Thanks, you guys.
Absolutely. I want to thank our sponsor, Tony Shuler, Pinnacle Medical Plus, for making it all happen. And again, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. This has been the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. For Sonny Banks, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks so much for listening.